This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here in Boston at the OpenStack Summit, and I'm talking today with Mark Shuttleworth.
Hello, Ian.
We've heard from the stage today the announcement of managed private cloud as a service as where the OpenStack Foundation believes we're going to see the next generation of cloud. Can you give us Canonical's view on this?
Yes, I was really glad to see this as an emerging theme at this year's OpenStack. Canonical launched Bootstack, which is our fully managed private cloud offering. So in short, what we will do is on-premise in a company's data center, we will build and operate an OpenStack for them on their hardware, on their racks, on their networks, so that they can consume cloud on-premise in exactly the same way that their developers will consume cloud from the public clouds. And that was a trail that we really blazed over the last 2 years. Now, the big announcement for us today was that one of the largest OpenStack consumers in the world has actually moved all of their OpenStack clouds in that direction. And it's, in fact, Bootstack. It's Canonical's Bootstack that they're consuming. So that's very exciting for us. It really shows that institutions are starting to trust Canonical and Ubuntu as the infrastructure of reference, effectively. And for me, what it's really exciting about it is that for the developers, the innovators at those companies, they now can consume their own internal infrastructure with the same agility that they would like to consume public infrastructure. I think that's really moving the bar forward when institutions can get agility on-premise.
One of the early drivers behind public cloud was not just the cost saving of not having physical infrastructure, but the fact that somebody else was going to manage this for you. You no longer needed to worry about it. The reality, however, of business, government, and compliance is that you do have to worry about it. You still have elements on-premises. You still have to be able to manage and see what's going on from a security as well as from knowing where your data is. What is driving this return to effectively a private cloud, albeit one that's no longer always under the control of the company?
Well, I would tease apart these different elements. If you look at the straight economics, there are economic arguments for almost any asset class in favor of, in some cases, owning and in some cases, renting. Think about cars. There are lots of people who own cars, but when they travel, they don't go and buy a car wherever they happen to be. They will rent a car or they'll use an app. For everyday folks, we understand at some level that when it comes to a particular kind of asset, sometimes you want to own it, sometimes you want to rent it. Now, think of CPUs. In principle, you, for a long time now, have had the choice of renting them from a public cloud provider like Amazon or Azure or Google, or buying them from your vendor of choice and earning them. And if it was a straight economic choice, you would see institutions happily doing both, for the same reason that people do both with cars. But if you look at private infrastructure, the picture is clouded and made fuzzy, effectively, because it's hard for people to understand what it's going to cost them to do all of the things that Amazon does automatically, because they have to find special people who understand OpenStack, which everybody agrees is big and complicated and moving fast. That turned into, for a lot of institutions, a very complicated spreadsheet. And so businesses tend to choose predictability and stability and understandability every time. So it made the choice between renting and buying a kind of a skewed one, because renting is very simple. Amazon will give you those VMs by the hour for a known price. And owning is very complicated because you need all these special people who understand OpenStack. So this is a big theme for Canonical over the last couple of years, is how do we take the owning proposition, how do we take OpenStack on-premise and really make that predictable and simple? So we're not that interested in fancy new possibilities of features that might be. We're much more interested in really helping institutions understand and predict the economics of having racks and racks of servers from their favorite vendor that they just own and operate as OpenStack. That's not to say that this is against public clouds, because we love public cloud. We do a lot of stuff with a lot of interesting people on public clouds. This is just to say that those two asset classes should be a simple choice for people. So Bootstack, which is our managed service offering, is simply that. We say, look, for $N per server per day, it's like $15 a server a day, we will turn those servers into an OpenStack. That OpenStack will run to an SLA, just like Amazon does, and we will upgrade it, we will back it up, we will do all the things that you would normally need to worry about. You don't have to worry about any of those things. It is now just a simple spreadsheet. So owning and renting can be both simple spreadsheets, and you can choose. So that meme seems to have spread in our business. Now the very largest OpenStack consumers are asking us to manage those clouds for them, which is great. The one that was talked about today, again, is Canonical's Bootstack service that's being used. But it seems that it's a broader trend, and other vendors are going to do the same thing, which is great.
When we think about the management side, one of the things that appealed to a lot of people early on was that if they were an IBM customer, when IBM launched OpenStack, it bundled all of those Tivoli tools. HP did the same, but that drove all the OpenStack distributions apart.
Fragmentation, yeah.
And quite rightly, come Vancouver, a couple of years ago, the foundation sat down and said, look, it's got to stop. We need this common core. Otherwise, we're just going to become 21st century Unix.
Yes, that's a very good analogy, I think.
Has that added to the complexity of people concerned about worrying? Because we've taken away the things they knew. Now we've said you have to use ARM management tools. Do you think that's been part of their confusion early on?
The foundation has not specified a set of tooling, which I think would be a poor choice, but they haven't done that. What they have done is said that in order to call yourself OpenStack, you need to meet a certain set of API standards, which really just involve making sure that when you are making changes to the software, that those changes are part of the normal OpenStack development process, so they're available to everybody. And so that's how they've de-Unixed the problem, which I think is tasteful. That's never been an issue for us. We've been much more concerned, for example, about helping customers upgrade in a standard and cheap way, because there's no single feature we can add in 6 months that's more valuable than the 1,500 features that you will get from the next release of OpenStack. So, in fact, our focus has always been on economical and predictable and reliable upgrade paths. So one of the hallmarks of Canonical's OpenStack on Ubuntu is that our customers tend always to be on the latest version of the cloud, or as soon as they want to be, effectively, they're on the latest version of OpenStack, because the upgrade process is easy, and you do it in place, and your users don't have to know.
And in fact, you're giving them an option now, aren't you? Because you've got the CPC program that's in play. So actually, they can take an even bigger step back. They don't need to start factoring in their upgrade process, because you're delivering that straight down to them.
That's Bootstack. We make private cloud feel, for your consumers, your users, we make it feel just like public cloud. As far as they're concerned, they're talking to an OpenStack. That OpenStack gets better every 6 months. It doesn't break, and it costs a predictable amount. Their spreadsheet is very simple. And so that allows them to then focus on the things that really matter for them. It turns out that even when you have someone like Canonical manage your OpenStack, as long as it's being professionally managed, those costs are completely competitive with the public cloud. And, of course, it's CapEx, not OpEx. So some people will prefer OpEx, and that's good, and that's fine. In some parts of the world, you want OpEx because you don't have data centers. There are lots of reasons to choose public cloud. But what we feel is that your hand shouldn't be forced in that. You shouldn't be in a situation where you can't operate your own private cloud if you want to. And managed private cloud services like Bootstack solve that problem. You don't have to hire anybody. You don't have to train anybody. Essentially, you just have to provide the data center space and the racks, and we will do all the work.
It would seem a natural move, therefore, that if we look at most of the OpenStack installs at the moment, they're going into almost traditional-style cloud environments. When we talk about providing data center space, that's more of a co-location deal that people would have had in the past. One of the big group of companies missing from this are people like Equinix, the big co-location companies. At what point do you start to now approach the Equinixes of this world and say, look, we've got this private cloud. It's a shoo-in for co-location. And in fact, we're making it easier as a sell point. Why aren't you talking to us?
It is a natural fit. There you have customers who've said, look, it doesn't have to be on my premises. I'm quite comfortable with it being on somebody else's premises, but I do want it to be my choice of hardware, and I am looking for CapEx, effectively. So yes, that is a natural fit. We do, in fact, work with some companies in that regard already, and that list continues to grow. SoftLayer, for example, started out as physical servers on demand, and you can build a Canonical Bootstack. We are happy to build a cloud for you on SoftLayer. I won't preempt other partnership announcements. They come in due course. Yes, it does seem to be a reasonable fit.
When we think about the management side of this, you're doing the management, you're making it easy for them, you're pushing it down, it's taken away from them. But they still have other things they need to align with their business. They need to think about what applications they're going to deploy. They need to understand uptime. They've got their own internal SLAs they've got to deliver, let alone the SLAs that you deliver to them. The IT departments haven't quite, in many cases, cottoned on to the fact that they're now a service provider. It's a phrase we've used for them, that must be the best part of almost 2 decades now.
Yes, the difficult thing for them is that they are going through the same transition that BT went through in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That traditionally, the only way you could get a server was from them. And now, of course, you can get it from Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Oracle, SoftLayer, Rackspace, and Azure. There's a good long list of companies that will give you a server chop-chop. For some IT departments, that's traumatic. They've lost their sense of control over the buying process. You know, the analogy I use is if you were a cabbie in London in 1905 and you loved horses, that there were all these sort of smelly, noisy, unreliable cars running around. In fact, you were being faced with a very profound choice. You either needed to continue to be in love with moving people around and figure out how to do it that way, with those smelly, noisy cars, or you needed to move to the country and love horses. Equally valid choices. For IT today, the reality is that fully automated cloud operations are real. They make commercial sense, and most businesses are not comfortable buying them from one of the major public providers. Our job is to give the business an internal option, but that internal option still has to be fully automated. The costs have to be predictable. And Canonical can do that because we do this for hundreds of companies. We work with hundreds of companies building clouds, and we manage many of those clouds, which means that we can predict the costs very effectively, and typically we can fight fires wherever they need to be fought. It's not like every cloud is on fire at the same time, which means we can have the best firefighters in the world when you need them. That is not as much fun for somebody who loves to glue things together, just like it wasn't as much fun if you loved horses. But at the end of the day, serving the business is what the job is, and Amazon is happy to do that from outside.
That automation is a struggle for a lot of organizations. They've been trying to get to grips with orchestration. They've been trying to deal with DevOps, and they're beginning to realize that actually it's DevOps security. They've got to have the SEC on the end of it. They're looking at their internal processes, and they're starting on the bits they own, the bits they fully control, to create the solution here. How do you then integrate what you're managing, what you're providing, that you're accelerating for them? How do they integrate that with what they're trying to do themselves on internal DevOps?
The first thing I'd say is, remember, we're just taking care of the virtual machines on demand. So Bootstack, the managed service OpenStack from Canonical, is simply you provide the racks in the data center, we will turn that into an OpenStack, and you consume VMs, and you can price that either by VM hour or by physical server. But they still have that entire DevOpsSec story for the applications. At least that's a step in the right direction for them, because the applications are what really define their business. OpenStack doesn't define anybody's business, except maybe for a public cloud provider using OpenStack, but they're, of necessity, the minority. Most businesses are interested in making airplanes or vending cola or what they do, the business of business. That means that their apps are what define their business, not the infrastructure. We just make the disk spin. They have to get that DevOpsSec thing right, but they can at least focus their attention on the piece that really matters and is unique to the business. No one else can do that for them. The business can't get that from anyone else. Even on the public cloud, the business has to operate its own apps.
It's quite a challenge for them, because you're actually asking them to abstract, even on what they do, from the hardware and the operating system just to focus on the applications. And for many of them, they're running a lot of legacy applications where the whole thing is intrinsically linked together. How do you see companies stepping away from those links? Are you seeing them just trying to package their legacy apps into a VM and shift it? Or are they truly re-architecting from scratch?
Well, we have the great privilege of working closely. If you look at companies like Netflix, Uber, Waze, they're all built on Ubuntu. So we have visibility on how companies that are born in the cloud era, how they designed and architected and run their stuff. They largely do it all on Ubuntu, and they ask us for help occasionally. We have visibility. That obviously, they have the fortunate perspective of essentially a blank canvas that's not very old and crufty. We were talking to somebody the other day, and they're talking about their legacy stuff from 3 years ago, which was kind of hilarious. People who have real legacy, 20, 30 years, 40 years worth of legacy, have to do what you're describing, which is they have to find space for the new stuff and make that work with the old stuff. Networking is our friend here, so you know we can connect things together, and they don't know that the other stuff is on the cloud. That's helpful. But also there's good cultural practices that are coming out of cloud native operations to say, how do you essentially evolve something complicated in a sane fashion? And if we architect all of these pieces so that they all have to change at the same time on the same day, well, we know that's going to be a bad day. So we'd rather kind of chop that up and essentially figure out how to evolve the pieces at their own pace. And we can often help organizations with getting to that. It does mean cultural change, both amongst their developers and their ops guys.
You're not just an x86 platform. Your relationship with IBM spans Power. It also spans System Z. Are you pushing Bootstack onto Z? Because I haven't seen an announcement.
It wouldn't occur to me to make a special announcement, because when we say Ubuntu is available on an architecture, we intend that everything on Ubuntu is available on that architecture. So I would say yes if someone said, can we Bootstack on Z? I would say yes if someone said, can we do Kubernetes on Z, right? My intent would be that if Ubuntu is available on an architecture or on a cloud, then anything you want to do with Ubuntu, you can do the same way on that architecture as any other architecture. So that's why you haven't seen a special announcement. We do see interest in one level up from OpenStack, because Z, of course, intrinsically has VMs on demand. OpenStack would be a way, and different API, but Z has VMs on demand. The IBM guys will tell you we invented cloud, and there's some truth to that. What we have seen is, which is interesting, is containers, and by this I mean really the Docker Kubernetes style of container rather than the LXD style machine container. So process containers, app containers. We have seen people pushing the limits of that on Z on Ubuntu, which is exciting. We consider all the architectures to be, we consider that to be a flat space. There are reasons for people to choose to use particular architectures, and we want to celebrate those reasons in those cases. But generally, if we say something works on Ubuntu, it wouldn't be an architecture-specific commitment. We would celebrate an optimization in an architecture or a capability of an architecture. But if we say we support Docker, then we support that across all the places where Ubuntu exists.
As you said at the beginning, the big announcement here at OpenStack has been the move towards managed private cloud as a service. As we look forward, where do you see cloud going? Do you see the managed private becoming a very big part of this? Or do you see there being a period where companies need to decide, do they want to go to public or stay?
Our goal for OpenStack is total automation. Our goal is that you could push a button and you get an OpenStack, and it's just a great OpenStack and it upgrades itself. Today we have operators standing by to shepherd it in the right direction when it needs that. But our goal is total automation. And so at that point, it's no longer a managed service. It's just your OpenStack. You can run it yourself and call us for support. So the reason we call it Bootstack is that it's a build, operate, and optionally transfer. Our goal is for people to feel like once they've seen us operating in that very rigorous, structured, repeatable, cost-effective, upgrades are no problem way, and they see, okay, you're doing that at $15 a node a day. Once they're confident that they can take that on and do it more cost effectively, that's great. We will just be phone support at that point, just like Red Hat is for their operating system. Just in terms of the numbers, the latest OpenStack survey is out. 54% of all of the production OpenStacks are on Ubuntu. In commercial terms, we came in just behind Red Hat, but if you look at the, in terms of paying customers effectively, but if you look at our growth curve, we feel very good about that. Red Hat are obviously an impressive company, been around a long time, but we feel like we really are consistently now opening up very established accounts of theirs to be multi-OS and buying support from us for Ubuntu and Red Hat for RHEL if they use it. In terms of the numbers, in fact, the percentage of production clouds on RHEL declined in the last 6 months, and I think that's because people are starting to understand that at scale what matters is economics and operations, and both of those are better with Canonical. Managed services, I think, are important as a bridge, but ultimately Amazon has no people managing those data centers, or very few people managing those data centers, and ultimately we need to get the costs down even further so that it really is true CapEx versus OpEx.
You mentioned that pushing up against Red Hat. SUSE seems to have fallen away even though it's acquired HPE in the last couple of months, which is quite a surprise to many of us. But one of the interesting things, of course, is you've just signed up OVH. OVH is just about to open here in the US. They've got the VMware deal that they've just done. It's going to put them in a very powerful position and a very aggressive position. They're not a company known for taking a step backwards.
If I look at our commercial growth rate versus their commercial growth rate, I think that is inevitable. I think the deep advantage we have is a developer advantage. Most institutions, if they ask their developers, for your next project, do you think you could be more productive on Ubuntu or on RHEL? Most institutions will find that most of their developers will say that's an easy choice in favor of Ubuntu. And so when you look at the things that are driving the institutional agenda now, they are containers, better on Ubuntu. 70% of all the containers out there on Ubuntu, doesn't matter if they're Docker or Kubernetes or LXD or Snaps or Rocket or anything else. IoT, the edge. And again, that's really a developer proposition. That's figuring out how to make an app for a thing that can reshape what's possible in your business. And I love that stuff because it really is unlocking fun innovation in small teams and individual nerds, which is great. Right? You don't have to be half the size of Google to go do something meaningful in IoT like you have to be in cloud. Yes, I think we are now well established as the challenger to Red Hat. And I think most of the established institutions are saying, look, it's worth my while to at least open up and have Ubuntu as a second OS. My developers will be happier. My infrastructure will be more cost effective. I get access to a bunch of capabilities I didn't have before. And so for things like machine learning, IoT, containers, cloud, yes, institutions are opening up to Canonical and Ubuntu.
You've got the deal for putting Ubuntu CPC into their environment. How much do you think that will drive you forward? And realistically, by the time the next survey comes out in 6 months, do you expect to have overtaken Red Hat?
If I look at our commercial growth rate versus their commercial growth rate, I think that is inevitable. I think the deep advantage we have is a developer advantage. Most institutions, if they ask their developers, for your next project, do you think you could be more productive on Ubuntu or on Realm? Most institutions will find that most of their developers will say that's an easy choice in favor of Ubuntu. And so when you look at the things that are driving the institutional agenda now, they are containers that are on Ubuntu. 70% of all the containers out there on Ubuntu, doesn't matter if they're Docker or Kubernetes or LexD or Snaps or Rocket or anything else. IoT, the edge. And again, that's really a developer proposition. That's figuring out how to make an app for a thing that can reshape what's possible in your business. And I love that stuff because it really is unlocking fun innovation in small teams and individual nerds, which is great, right? You don't have to be half the size of Google to go do something meaningful in IoT like you have to be in cloud. Yes, I think we are now well established as the challenger to Red Hat. And I think most of the established institutions are saying, look, it's worth my while to at least open up and have Ubuntu as a second OS. My developers will be happier. My infrastructure will be more cost effective. I get access to a bunch of capabilities I didn't have before. And so for things like machine learning, IoT, containers, cloud, yes, institutions are opening up to Canonical and Ubuntu.
Mark, thank you for your time today.
It was a great pleasure.